Yes, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of the Corner Store Podcast. I hope you are having a great day. I'm Kevin Koval, your host, and we have a great, great guest in the Corner Store this evening. But before we go into that, first, I hope that you are doing well and maintaining and hanging in there. I know that these times are trying, and so I hope you're getting some solace. I hope you're getting some respite. I hope you're taking good care of yourself. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope that this is a space that gives you some sort of inspiration throughout your week. That is certainly the intention. Every week, we engage with creatives and artists and organizers and thinkers from all over the planet who I think are doing really incredible and inspired work. Today is no different. I want to ask you to do me a favor. Please, if you have not subscribed and rated this podcast already, go on Apple Music, go on your iTunes, go to Spotify, wherever you get and download and stream podcasts. And please rate and subscribe to the Corner Store. We recently had to reconfigure some things on Apple Music, so make sure that you are subscribing to the Corner Store with my name, Kevin Koval, and you will get the new content we put out every week. Today, I'm excited to welcome into the Corner Store someone who is multi-talented, an incredible graffiti writer, a beautiful visual artist, and someone who cares about and works for real in the streets of Chicago. We have none other than Atlas in the building. Sir, welcome into the Corner Store.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Thank you for having me, Kevin. I really appreciate being here, man.
Oh, my man. It's a pleasure to have you in the building. And, you know, I have to say, man, I came to know your work because I saw it in a gallery that the homie Yams put together. And I was just, it's visually stunning. So obviously it is, I read it as graffiti. And so, but you know, of course you're doing studio work. So I kind of want to talk about your practice first as an artist and what you do.
Sure. Yeah. No, transitioning from that sort of, graffiti, mindset to the more fine art side of the world has been an interesting transition for me, attempting to leave one life or grow bigger than one life and into a next. You're not the first human who looks at me as a graffiti writer because my work is so inspired by that culture. Again, we're just trying to grow a little bit bigger, I think, than...
Right. Well, because I mean, and this has been a long running conversation within the culture itself. But once graffiti kind of makes its way to canvas, you know, does it one become something else? And certainly what you're doing on canvas is not just letters. Like, you seem to be inspired by what's, you know, around and inside and in the background of the letter, like beginning to kind of pull apart the letter and kind of deal, not totally in abstraction, but you're deconstructing the form in some ways.
Yeah. It feels that way as I do it. I think so. Number one, my style comes from talking to an art therapist, right? My art is incredibly based in my own emotions and my own journey. I'm a prior service veteran with combat experience, and that's been an interesting road to navigate. And
where did you serve? Where did you serve, if you don't mind me asking?
I was in the Army. I was a forward observer for an infantry company, deployment to Korea on the DMZ, and year deployment to Iraq, Caladia, Iraq, just east of Fallujah.
Wow, okay.
That was back in 2004 and 2005 when things were hot. So again, there's some baggage there as far as reintegration goes, and I found my linchpin to in reintegration was my art and what I turned to previous to my service years. I then used post-service in a very effective way to deal with some of the stressors that I was carrying around. So again, my art being based very much in this emotional journey that I've taken previous and then post-service. I try not to hold it into just letters, right? I enjoy that my art stays emotional, it stays fluid, stays full of energy. That I choose to lean towards, right?
That's really interesting. So you came home, and I mean, how did you find a therapist or an art therapist? How did
It was right in the midst of the hubbub, you know, the craziness that was the VA system back in 06, 07. I wasn't doing very good with my own reintegration. I was struggling, right? There was some serious things going on at that moment in time. But I joined a VFW. I had some close friends that I grew up with here in the city. I grew up on the Northwest side. I'm a born and raised native Chicagoan. And I reconnected with some friends that I had as a child who just so happened to be veterans at a VFW. And they steered me toward an art therapist at the Jesse Brown VA clinic on Damon and Taylor. So I went and had a revealing conversation with a piece of charcoal in my hand and a roll of paper on the table. And this is where that energy just started to come out. So all the letter-based art that I had done previous to that was now coming out in this abstract way, and I just have been running with it ever since.
Wow. Well, I want to go into your history with letters and writing and graffiti, but had you ever prior to that thought about or gone or been in therapy?
To be honest, so I was one of the ADHD crowd, you know, that's my age bracket. I'm 35 years old. I'll be 36 tomorrow.
Hey, happy born day, man.
Scorpio season. Thank you. So yeah, right. I was part of that ADHD crowd. There was some conversations with therapists when I was a youth, but nothing in my adult years, right? I really did join the Army straight out of high school. So there really wasn't a window, right? For even me to understand myself, I would say.
Right, sure. So take us back, because Northwest side of Chicago, what neighborhood are we talking?
Belmont Cragen neighborhood. I grew up right by the Brickyard, Fullerton and Narragansett. My parents still live over there.
Okay, right. So how did you come into thinking about letters and thinking about graffiti?
It was the community, right? So I'm growing up on the northwest side of the city. I went to Gordon Tech freshman, sophomore, and then Holy Cross High School junior, senior. A lot of the friends were at Lane Tech, and some of my existence, both in the Belmont Cragen neighborhood and other neighborhoods, in high school, it could be gang charged. You know, it was a navigating of a real urban situation. So I found solace in graffiti writing, right? Like these kids who loved art, it let me skate by some of the stickier situations in my life. You know, gang member asking me, you know, who I am and why I'm here. Hey, I'm a writer, and you kind of get that free pass. And it got me out of a few sticky situations. And I just sort of found a home with the art kids, especially the ones who wore black t-shirts, right? Like a little more edgy, a little more maybe secretive artists.
And what, first of all, that's amazing, right? That art kids, graffiti kids get a pass. Cause I think people think and have the misconception that if you are, if there's a gang in your neighborhood, whatever that means, that it's right. All encompassing, and that there's, you know, you're in it if you are in that neighborhood. And, you know, obviously that's not the case. How did you begin to grab, like who did you begin to grab? Are there early writers that caught your attention, or crews, or how did you get, how did you get brought into that community?
Yeah, my entrance was through a crew called FIK, and they were a heavy Northwest side crew, base crew, heavy out of Lane Tech, some members in Gordon Tech, and some members eventually when I ended up going to Holy Cross on the far west side of the city. It was FIK, it was UAC, it was EDSK, it was even the older crews, GOG, FOC, STN, you know, these crews decorated all of our neighborhoods, right? Like it consumed me to think that somebody sat there and did that and risked it. And it looks cool, right? That was its own journey, right? Like once you start writing on things, making it look cool while you are worried about being caught is its own thing. And I was seeing these giant crews with style, and it influenced me from the moment I could read it, from the moment I understood that it existed, right? I feel like it was long before even high school. Yeah. But I didn't start actually writing with a moniker of my own, with a name of my own, until high school. So.
And what was Atlas your first name? Or
no, to be honest, I wrote Stolen was one. And I actually ended up writing on a bus station right up by the Harlem Irving Plaza, by the old Shooters Buffet up there toward Orange and Harlem. And again, another moment of just like, you know, the hook, the fish hook, you know, got me right there. I was like enthralled. But it was also interesting because I was raised by a mom and a dad who would have had my ass, right? Like in a sling immediately, who did multiple times, chew me up, really. So it was navigating this really kind of Northwest side kind of, you know, generic lifestyle, let's say.
Well, what do your parents do?
Oh, they're my father's a union carpenter, and my mom is a CPS SECA, SECA. She's a special education care. I can't remember what the A stands for, but she works with special education kids in CPS K through 4.
Okay. Wow. Great. Yeah. So they're, you know, good working people in Chicago.
Right.
Where are blue collar? Right.
Wake up, pay your taxes. Yeah. And don't write on things. Yeah.
Right. Right. Exactly. So and where? How long has your family been in Chicago? Like, where are you guys from?
Yeah. So my parents were born and raised here, both of them as well. Their parents were born and raised in other countries. So my parents being the first generation, I'm a second generation Polish American and Mexican and Puerto Rican American, so Latino American, and they grew up by Damon and Armitage, so right there by Lottie's Bar.
Okay. Oh, right. Of course. And yeah. And of course, you know, Polish, Mexican, and Puerto Rican is a great Chicago combination. Like, and I love, you know, that happens a lot, especially in the second generation. Yep. So that's pretty incredible. So when did they first get an inkling as to what you were up to as an extracurricular activity, and what was their response to your art?
I remember my mom caught me leaving the house against her will, and she patted me down, right? Like, my mom is she's a tiny woman, but she is a firecracker, and it's me, my brother, and my dad. We're all over 6'2", and my mom's a little bitty lady, and she runs the show. So she patted me down, and I had spray cans and other nefarious things on me. It's almost like she couldn't believe that maybe her kid was involved in that type of lifestyle. It was pushed back against immediately, right? Do not do that. Like, they attempted to give me spaces to let it out, but right, like the canvases or the notebooks or the whatever. And they really did try to quell it, and it didn't work.
So I would imagine, like most writers, you probably got caught up in the, you know, maybe have been arrested or brought in a few times. So
I've been grabbed a few times, thank goodness. No, never for anything felony, right?
Good, level, right. Because yes.
I think that in this day and age, that is really from the old heads to the new heads, I think that is the differentiating, the demarcation line, let's say, when these small things that older heads used to get away with now became felonies. So while I did have a few run-ins with the law, nothing to that extent. So thank goodness. But yeah, the running, the jumping the fences, the, you know, having the cops knock on your front door, right? And oh, we think your kid was over here. my mom has defended me in those moments. Not mine. He was all right.
So oh, good. Wow. Like, she's a real one then.
Yeah, she's definitely a real one. That's for sure.
That's beautiful. So of course, so you graduate high school, you're a writer, but you go right into the Army.
Yeah. So I was noticing even at the end of my high school existence, the landscape that I had to navigate as a graffiti writer maybe wasn't, it was a lot more obstacle saturated than I anticipated in freshman year, let's say. So you start to realize that beef is a real thing, that crews, that violence in this culture is a real thing, that, you know, these are maybe some things that I just liked doing art and kind of enjoyed the rush. I'm not trying to, you know, get in a knife fight or something crazy over this. And I started to see more of that. There was actually a large brawl outside of Wayne Tech. This was probably 1999, and it was between FTR and FIK. And it was incredibly violent. And I'm lucky to not get grabbed for anything that happened there. And I really do send my regrets, but it really painted the picture like, hey, this might not be the lifestyle or the road that you thought it was / want to continue down. Right. Sure. And there was also a large part of me who was raised by an uncle who jumped into D-Day. Right. So he told me those stories, and I always felt like I'm 18 years old. I don't want to be 45 and regret not using this 18-year-old back to go do something that I want to do.
And so had you wanted to go into the armed services for a while?
Yeah, I thought about it junior and senior year, right? I wasn't convinced that college was for me, right? Especially the activities that I was participating in. So I just started to listen to other answers, let's call them, and the Army fit, right? And yeah. I've always been like a bigger kid, and I've always played football, did karate, taekwondo, and hapkido when I was younger, right? So I was always physical, and the Army seemed like a physical challenge that I could overcome and benefit my life in that moment. Hindsight being 2020, it wasn't everything it was cracked up to be.
No, well, they sell you a dream, right? And yeah, and that dream obviously is not what it is.
Yeah, it's not as damaged as you are when you leave a situation like the service, whether you were deployed or not. Right. Everybody comes out of the service, in my opinion, different, for better or worse. There's a lot of loose ends when you come out that you have to deal with.
I would imagine there's something about being a graffiti writer that creates a kind of nerve that does, in an odd way, in a way that obviously is never probably intended from, you know, writers, like that does prepare you in some ways for the military.
Truth, yeah, I'll buy that. The penchant for adrenaline, the sort of being in tune with the chaos around you. Let's say it right, like being hyper aware. These were all things that I learned previous to day one basic training.
Right.
And not just the graffiti element, right? Because let's say I wrote graffiti in Lexington, Kentucky. I don't think I would have had the same experience as I did writing graffiti here in the biggest city, right, in the Midwest. Like, it's wonderful. And it taught me a lot.
Yeah.
And for the Army.
Now, I don't want to ask too much about your service, but I do... Did you ever write when you were deployed, or did you ever, like, did you maintain a practice, or how did you maintain a practice?
Yeah, it was interesting, right? You have to